This episode of Off Course is brought to you by Squares Golf Shoes. Visit squares.com and take a look at the variety of footwear options, including the Augusta limited edition shoe designed with Sir Nick Faldo. And for a limited time, that comes with four awesome bonus gifts. Take a look and enjoy the show.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. You can find me on Twitter at CanadaanGolf, and do follow us as well at Off Course THP. I'm going to call this a special episode. We have a repeat visitor to the show in Noelle over from Cleveland, Srixon, Zexio. But she also snuck in a pretty special guy from the THP perspective, and that's none other than Jamie Sadlowski. You can follow him on social media on Twitter at Jamie Sadlowski. I don't know how you stole that name, but hey, welcome. Welcome back, Noelle. And very first, welcome to Jamie. How are you guys?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is not a secret show. We didn't surprise anyone with the invite. There's been a bunch of questions thrown through both the THP homepage and the THP forum. I want to start this and say that, Jamie, you are not unfamiliar, let's say, with THPers. You put on a couple shows for us in the past. Do you have, just right out of the gate, something that you recollect from a THP event that might have stuck out to you a little bit?
Yeah, I guess there's been a couple things. The deal we did in Scottsdale at Top Golf was pretty good, and then the buffet dinner we had at the PGA show. Was that last year or 2 years ago?
I think that was 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
I still am one belt notch up from that. So, but yeah, it's obviously playing talking stick with some of the viewers and, you know, watching them get all their gear and stuff like that was obviously pretty neat. Spending, a full day on the golf course with them and, you know, being able to answer questions, whether, you know, stuff that they're not comfortable to ask in front of other people. But yeah, that was, you guys do a great job taking care of your viewers and fun to be a part of.
Yeah, it's always a blast. And Noelle certainly makes it interesting with all the product she brings for the guys. And then obviously, and I don't know how much this is discussed, but is there a bit of a rivalry that goes on between the two of you?
Well, that's, it's kind of where the rivalry started, which I don't think was fair.
Yeah.
But I think it was Babbitt that started that I lost in a long drive competition somehow at Topgolf, I think is how it went. To my recollection, I don't think that was true, but.
So I think everyone listening saying the only way that Jamie could lose a long drive competition if the ball shattered through the head of the driver and stayed in there while you swung. But yeah, I'm sure.
I don't think it was with my old Cleveland. I do believe it was their product, which.
Yeah, it was the Launcher HB irons. We like came back with. I think you hit like the pitching wedge, and then I grabbed someone's driver.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense. No, that's doable then.
Were you wearing flip flops, Noelle?
No, I was wearing heels.
Okay.
Which really doesn't help my case either.
You know, I had Noelle on a couple weeks ago, Jamie, and we were talking about playing Pebble and that sort of California circuit that they just finished doing. We were having a little bit of a laugh at the downhill par three on Pebble, which is, you know, a very memorable hole. We were joking around, is it like a foot wedge for you? How do you maintain that sort of shot? Is there a club in your bag that you can full out to that hole?
Well, I've played Pebble quite a bit, and I've honestly been in a scenario where I could have thrown it on, and I've been in the position where I think I've hit 7-iron before. So
okay.
It just kind of depends on the conditions you get it. But I think the last time we're there, it was playing like 90 yards, 93 yards, and it was pretty calm out, not much going on. But yeah, I have played it where it's been borderline monsoon, and it's a little chip 7-iron.
Well, before we get into too many user or questions from the viewers and the listeners, I do want to know, because I think everyone's really curious, you've been going through a bit of a transition. In Ohio, I call this the end of my off season. I'm not sure where you've spent the most of your time over the last couple of months, but where are you right now? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm in Scottsdale right now. I've been here for maybe a little over a month, just prepping for Q school. Obviously, PGA Tour Canada last year canceled the whole year, and we didn't even get to play Q school. So that's coming up at the end of March. But yeah, throughout the summer after they canceled Q school, the pandemic going on, traveling was not made easy, cross border and stuff like that. And honestly, since like 2003, I hadn't had a break. I've been kind of battling some shoulder stuff the last like really year and a half to almost 2 years, to where I never got proper rest and taking care of it. So I played it just at home in the summer. I practiced, played some funner events and stuff like that. There wasn't anything going on. And then just kind of did some rehabilitation, got everything to where I feel normal again. And to be able to play pain-free for the first time in a couple years is nice. So yeah, I'm down here in Scottsdale grinding away, getting ready for the end of the month where I got Q school, and looking forward to a big year this year.
That's awesome. You know, I was checking your social a little bit, as I often do before these shows, and I read that the suggestion you made for anyone trying to gain distance is to move to Alberta for a winter and shovel snow. Now, shoulder surgeries shoulder issues being what they are, is that kind of like, hey, if I move out of Alberta, I'll stop having shoulder problems, or what's going on there?
Well, I think it was mostly from old hockey injuries, you know, playing a pretty high level of junior all those years. And then, you know, from 2003, competing in the World Long Drive Championships all the way up to 2015 and doing all the corporate stuff, 70, 80 corporate outings a year, and traveling 250 days, like I never really got a true break. There was a couple weeks here or there, but nothing to really take care of what I needed to. So, you know, it was kind of a blessing. It was kind of a bummer not to be able to play. And, you know, if you didn't have PGA Tour status or Korn Ferry status, like you're pretty stagnant, nowhere to play, mini tour stuff. And then being stuck in Canada with all the quarantine stuff, it, you know, it wasn't feasible to really do much. So it was a blessing at the same time. But yeah, the injuries, they stem from swinging a golf club really fast for a lot of years, and then a lot of hockey injuries as well.
It's my understanding you call that finishing the backswing, you know, connected.
That's correct.
At the top.
Yeah. It's never complete until you can see it out of the left corner of your eye.
I love that. I think I did that a couple of times today. I'm definitely feeling it in my left shoulder. Hey, yeah. My first round of the year, by the way. And I did survive, Noel, so I think I'm like very close to competing with your current round status for 2021, which is not ideal.
Yeah, exactly. It's not ideal at all. But, I mean, that's working in the industry. What can you expect?
Okay. Well, hey, let's kick off a couple questions, because I know people are super pumped to get their questions answered by Jamie. And hopefully I do this in a way that you can actually see it as we have it pulled up. So Todd J. from the THP Forum wants to know, what the biggest change you've had to make, Jamie, to your swing as you transition from long drive competitions to the tour?
Yeah, you know, I was on a podcast the other day and we talked about this. And, you know, when I, like, no instruction prior to really 2016, the fall of 2016, I was always just kind of natural. And, you know, if you watch different swings on tours of guys that, you know, like a Bubba Watson or guys that don't like to know what their swings look like, that's kind of how I live my life until I wanted to play professionally. And, you know, we all do things in hopes that it makes it better. And, you know, I took some instruction and changed some things in my golf swing that, you know, at the end of the day, like everyone has a blueprint. And, you know, my backswing with the driver is never going to change. It's going to be past parallel, and that doesn't make it right or wrong. That's just who I am. So I did some things that, you know, in hopes to make my game better. And did it help? I learned a lot. Yeah. And I'm kind of going back to my old blueprint of being more athletic, less thinking, less, you know, the checklist before you go play, and less swing thoughts. But for me, it was just, you know, being more consistent, obviously, with a driver. When you're making your living hitting drivers, it's the one club in the bag that's on a tee and everything else is on the ground. So, you know, when you're trying to launch the ball real high, head works behind, there's a lot of stuff going on. But, you know, just for me, I'm kind of going back to the way I used to swing and getting good results and just being natural again. And I think that's a huge part of the success that I'm going to have this year, is just feeling like I'm me again and not trying to swing the club the way someone wants you to swing it. I think for any golfer, whether you're amateur or you know, you're a good player or a great player. I think those keys in your swing, that's who you are and you can't change. So just consistency, reps, you know, I think that's the biggest thing for me.
It's a good time you said that, because one of my favorites ever to play the game, Arnold Palmer, truly buys into that swing your swing mentality. And I love that. I love that you're taking that and going in that direction with it. That's a good thing. Like you said, your own blueprint. I'm guilty of it as well. Maybe not as efficiently as you are, but I'm no stranger to the past parallel. We're basically in a club at this point, and just surviving as I age.
Exactly. Yeah. Father time still unbeaten.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, let's kick another one off. This is from Nate over on the forum. He says, who has been the most inspiring person to you on your golf journey? And is there someone on tour you like to mirror your game after?
Ooh, yeah. I mean, there's been some guys that have been real influential. I think like a Gary McCord, who's kind of taken me under his wing since I joined out at Wisbrock in like 2009. You know, he's been around the game so long. He's played the game. He's watched the game at the highest level for 30 plus years, being a broadcaster. He's helped me a lot. He's caddied for me in some mini tour events, US Open sectionals, stuff like that. And I think when you get a different theory on, you know, my given abilities are a lot different than others, and sometimes I forget that. And when he's on the bag, he instills that confidence, whether it's in the right way or not. But yeah, like the times that he's been on my bag, I've played well, because, you know, he's kind of a figure that he's like, you know, he gives you that confidence of, you know, these guys can't do what you can do. Like, let's go. And then most recently would be Bob Tway. You know, I'm working with him quite a bit, and it's more so just like doing stuff that is simple to make you better. He's won a major. He's won numerous times on the PGA Tour. He's played 600 plus events out there, Champions Tour stuff. So, you know, when we work together, we just keep it real, real simple. Watch a little bit of video, make sure the club's in a good place, and then honestly just go play golf. Like today, we played in 30 mile an hour winds in Arizona, which isn't ideal. Desert on both sides. So, you know, it's more so of a, let's go figure it out. Let's go play golf. Let's not sit and beat balls all day. Which, that mentality a couple of years ago, like I hit balls and, you know, when I got on the golf course, I'd look around and be like, you know, when you're raking balls firing at a pin and you pull it left, there's no repercussions. You rake another one where, you know, you got to visually plan what you're going to do. And, you know, we do hit a lot of balls, but it's more thoughtful process that goes into it. And obviously, other people that have been influential, my agent's been a big influence on me as well. He's, you know, taking me under his wing since really 2007 and taught me a lot. Family's important. My wife, that's got the patience to deal with me being gone a lot of the time and come home after a rough week and you're miserable from playing bad golf, you know? So yeah, I mean, there's a big fleet of people that have really helped me along the way for sure.
It's interesting. And you made a comment in there that I really want to talk about a bit, because, you know, I've played some competitive hockey in my life, so I understand that sort of like really high octane feeling. You get on the ice and you go hard until you can't breathe and you jump off. And I'm sure a bit of that falls into the long drive as well. You get yourself super amped up. You go as hard as you can. Whereas tour golf is definitely a different experience. And was that a hard transition for you overall, is to get away from that sort of high octane pump and understand that the whole day is a grind and it's just a different mentality you need to take?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, hockey's 30 to 45 seconds, high intensity sprints, and then you're done. You get to think about it, you get to watch. Long drive, you got 2 minutes and 45 seconds with six golf balls on the tee, and you're trying to get as much adrenaline pumping as you can. And, you know, when you leave that driving range to go play that round of golf, you know, you're just trying to set the tone for the day of, you know, how can I hit every shot as good as possibly that I can? But when that shot's done, it's over. It's a 6 hour round. You deal with slow play, which for me is so hard. Like, I believe I'm a fast player and I'm thoughtful in the fact that I can do it within my 40 seconds, usually takes 20. But yeah, it's a different mentality. You got a flat line. There's no question. There's ups and downs. You know, you can shoot 60 that day and there's still going to be times where your heart rate's beating because you know, you hit a bad shot and you got to make a 15 footer to keep your round going for par. So it's just, it's different. It's not so up. It's trying to flat line and be level headed, make the best bad decision when you are out of play and when it's time to score, you know, really focus on task at hand. But yeah, it's completely the best way I've described it, I think, is long drive. I had 14 drivers in my bag. In golf, I have 14 clubs in my bag that all have a different purpose. And you've got to just focus and, you know, take the good with the bad. And at the end of the day, you got to post a score and do everything you can to, you know, whether it's saving one shot, a half a shot, whatever it is. So yeah, it's very different in the fact that you're just trying to flat line for 5.5 hours, sometimes six, whether you like it or not.
So I've got a follow-up to that, and you are 100% welcome to tell me that you don't feel like answering it, don't feel like you have to. I'm curious because I think it's a problem. I know a lot of people, especially on golf Twitter, think it's a problem. Does the tour have a pace of play issue right now?
I believe so, because – and I'm going to speak on my past experience playing up in Canada – is you can have a field of 156 players. You can have 10 guys or 15 guys out there that are slow and know they're slow and nothing happens to them. And I'm a fast player, but I know those guys in front of me are going to play slow, which slows me down. Now I'm like, well, I'm not in a hurry. I'm just going to have to wait anyways. So, you know, it's a vicious cycle, because I get up there, I take my 40 seconds. You know, it's 40 and 10 if you're first to play, so you get an extra 10 seconds. But I know if I hit that shot in 20 seconds and I'm in a group, three guys that are playing fast, I know we're going to wait on the next shot anyways. So, you know, after a few holes, you're sitting there going like, well, what's the sense in, you know, why not take 2 minutes? You know, if you have a quick downhiller and it runs away and, you know, like, why not take 2 minutes? Because there's nothing's going to happen. And you know, when a guy marks a one footer, unless you're standing in someone's line, like, tap the ball in. Like, it doesn't need to be marked. You don't need to go through your whole routine where you line the ball up. You got the line on the ball. It's three strokes. Then you get behind it again. It's a one footer. Like, step up, knock it in, as long as you're not stepping in someone else's line. But yeah, like, to me, slow play is a huge problem. Players are protected, and I just don't know how they're going to change it. Like, on the PGA Tour, you're going to find a guy $1,000. Well, that has no relevance to them. They're making so much money. Now, if you start adding a shot quicker than you can think, a great example is I was playing a mini tour event here a couple of years ago, and McCord was on the bag, and he went to the rules official and said, that guy is so slow. We're like on the sixth hole, and the rules official literally walked up to him and said, you've got one. Get into position. Never seen the guy the rest of the day. So –
wow.
If stuff like that happened, I mean, I think the game would be in a better place. And to me, when you're watching professionals take 2 minutes on TV to hit a shot, well, Johnny at his country club that's a 30 handicap yeah. is going to stand behind his ball and do the exact same thing, because he's seen that guy do it and he hit a great shot. Now he's going to do it. Now he tops it. And when you're taking, you know, 6 to 12 strokes on every hole, now we have a huge problem.
Right. So,
I think it stems in the professional game and it trickles down, and obviously something needs to be done. I don't know how they're going to enforce it. That's on them. But, you know, players are protected by the rules officials, I guess, and the tour.
I've got a question. So I'm a fast player too. I'm like you for sure. But I do agree with you that, hey, say I have 40 seconds, it only takes 20, you know, and the last thing you want to do is wait again. Have you ever tried to take more time for your game? And because, like, I know I have, like, and I'm like you, where it's like, I get up and I don't even take a practice swing. Even in like competition, I never take practice swings. I figure out my line, figure out my yardage, blah, blah, blah.
That's part of your routine.
Right. It drives me crazy though, when I wait for someone else and I physically couldn't even look at that person because it would just drive me bananas. But I did at one point in college try to slow down. So I guess my question to you is, have you ever tried that or would you ever do that?
I have. And it honestly, it throws me out of my rhythm, you know?
Yeah.
And the last thing I want to do is throw myself out of rhythm. But what do you do? You know, like, do you sit by your bag and wait 2 minutes and get your time in, then hit a shot. Like, when it's my turn, I'm going to pull a club. I'm going to pick a target. You know, if the wind picks up, I'll back off. But it's not like I'm not going to stand on my bag and lean on it for 3 minutes to hit a shot. You know, I think it becomes indecisive, and it
right.
To me, I'm going to hit a worse shot. If I don't pull the trigger quick, then I become indecisive. And then I'm like, well, I don't know if this is the right club. And me being me, I'll probably hit a bad shot because now I'm not sure. Where, you know, usually instinctively your first thought process is the right one. So hit it. So, yeah I mean, it's a big problem. I don't want to ever be a slow player, and I don't want to ever be so quick that I'm not focused. It's somewhere in the middle, but it is kind of sad when someone else is controlling that.
Right.
Well, let's dial it back a little bit, because that was a heavy one. I'm really glad you went into that. I think everyone who's not on the clock agrees with you. So it's nice to have that sort of validation.
So I'm usually standing around a whole long time.
Do they allow Sudoku on the tour? You allowed to take a book out?
Keep my brain firing instead of stalling out on me.
Maybe like some Archie comics or something like that. Well, hey, let's kick this over to J-Mix. I'm going to lead with a big one here. Hamburger or cheeseburger for you? And I do have a question. Do you know what I mean when I say some of that real Berta beef?
Yeah, obviously a cheeseburger. There's no doubting that. But yeah, in Northern Alberta, we're known for our beef. So
yeah, a little Letterkenny action there. You know that?
Yes, yeah, sir.
The Berta beef. All right. Let's go with the real question in this from J-Mix is, what's your workout regimen or regime like so that you maintain that flexibility swinging the way you do?
I think a lot of it is just genetics. You know, I've always been a guy that's been pretty nimble and flexible. The way I train now is different than the way I train for long drive. Obviously, you're trying to create as much speed as possible. And, you know, pro golf is all about, you know, avoiding injury and just kind of, for me, it's sustaining strength. I mean, I hit it plenty far. Do I still do some stuff to gain speed? Yeah, of course. But it's more so like, when I get done at the end of the day and I'm wiped because I've been practicing all day, like, I'm not going to go bang a bunch of weights out. So some stretching, obviously foam rolling and, you know, lacrosse ball in the hips just to get everything moving. But I honestly, I don't do anything crazy. And, you know, as you get older, like, I don't feel the same way I did when I was 20. I mean, my warm-up regimen's a little bit, I would say, thoughtful. The fact that I hit a lot more wedges than I used to. I used to just, you know, clip a few wedges and then go straight into the two iron and then driver. But now it's a little more thoughtful. And, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. But stretching.
Jamie is after commercial days. I mean, granted, they're 12-hour days. The director makes him, like, crush drivers all day long. But honestly, he's like an old grandpa after, like, the day. Oh. And he needs to, like, go in the hot sauna.
This old frame that's from about 2003 to 15, this old frame's been through a lot, swinging the club 150 miles an hour. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, people are always after flexibility. And, you know, when you work out, you're going to tighten down. But I do think flexibility is more important than strength for someone that is lacking flexibility. You gain speed from putting the club in a further position away from your body, obviously rotating and everything. So, to me, flexibility is huge. Stretching, you can never stretch enough. But yeah, I don't do anything crazy. There's so much stuff out there nowadays where you have you need a trainer and then you need another guy to pull your leg. And like, I'm not into that. I'm more so kind of do it on my own and little foam rolling here and there. When you know, there's days where I don't stretch, I feel great. And there's days where my lower back's tight, so I know I need to hit my hips, but nothing too crazy.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned commercials, Noel, because I couldn't pick one question because there was about a million of them asking, what was the initial thought process on doing the Grandpa Jamie commercials? Have you ever gone to a tournament dressed as Grandpa to mess with other players? Will there be another Grandpa Jamie appearance? Those are hilarious. Are there new Grandpa Jamie commercials coming anytime soon? I think you have a bit of a hit.
I'll let you handle that, Noel.
Yeah.
Well, for your first question, like, I guess the initial thought process. So I mean, yeah, we officially signed Jamie in 2018, and we were really, really stoked about it. Obviously, we brought back the Cleveland Woods and Irons, so, you know, we were trying to find an ambassador and a player, you know, tour player who can represent the brands really, really well. And, you know, we're stoked to have Jamie on board. And not only did we want to market him, you know, as being the longest tour pro on the planet, the big hit of the Kyrie Irving thing had just came out. And so one day, I don't even know who thought about it.
Scott.
Yeah, maybe him. He's a senior VP. I don't know. I think I was watching. So I don't know. Anyways, we just like we had a list of ideas on a whiteboard, and someone wrote, you know, like a Grandpa Jamie kind of a thing, and it just stuck with us. And granted, this was the very first thing we had ever done something out of the ordinary too. You know, from Cleveland Golf. So, you know, we pitched the idea to the agent, and he was down for it and open. And I think Jamie was a little bit blindsided, but handled it like a champ. And it was super successful. And I think I just checked it too earlier this week, and I think it's almost hit 6 million views. So, I mean, it obviously was very successful, and it was so much fun to make. And Jamie and I have some secrets that we won't share about that day, but you know, we made it work and we killed it. And then we made it was super popular and a high demand. So we made a 2.0, and we brought in our other Cleveland ambassador, Peter Jacobson, to play as Uncle Jake. So, you know, and those two together are hilarious. They have a lot of history, Peter and Jamie. So it on camera, they were perfect. And who knows, maybe there is a 3, maybe there isn't, you know, that's something we'll maybe share and figure that out. But yeah, they're a lot of fun to make for sure.
Little mini hints. I like that. Jamie, tell me, how much fun is stuff like that for you? Obviously you have a role with Cleveland Strixon, and you know, sometimes it's not as exciting as others. This had to be one of those times where it's just an absolute blast for you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the world is so damn serious right now, and it's fun to do something out of the box. I remember my agent called me. He's like, "Yeah, you're filming, you know, da 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 these dates." I'm like, "Okay, perfect, no problem." And then like a few days before, he's like, "Hey, it's not gonna be your typical shoot." And I'm like, "Well, what do you mean?" He's like, "Well, they're gonna dress you up as an old guy," and I'm like, "What?" So I wasn't too fond of the idea early, but we had made some agreements for filming day, and yeah, I was, you know, I'm usually a pretty shy, reserved guy, and that role kind of takes you out of that, which is good for me too. But yeah, it was obviously fun to do. And you know, when I have my niece and nephew and, you know, kids that, you know it for that, and even, you know, whether they're interested in golf or not, when stuff hits YouTube and becomes fairly popular and it's in their faces, and you know, it's kind of neat to have that as well. So it was fun to do. It was different than anything I've ever done in the golf industry, to say the least. But yeah, it was fun.
You know, I remember watching that and just thinking to myself, I immediately said, what would I do if I went to my range and saw a guy looking the way you did with a move like that? And I'm just like, I can't come around on how I'd react. So I'm only trying to put myself in the position of these guys. It's just a cool way of doing it. And it, you know, showcases the brand in a really fun way. And like you said, it's an opportunity for people to actually genuinely have fun, which is well needed at this point. I think everyone would agree.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, kudos to their PR team as well. I think thinking outside of the box is huge nowadays. I mean, you see so many commercials that are just, you know, rinse and repeat, and you can put all the stuff in the background to make it look cool, but you know, to do something like that where it's hands-on with, you know, your staff players and stuff like that, and you're around, you know, normal people, that's not staged, it's very off the hip, you know, it's different, and it's cool at the same time, for sure.
Yeah, it's different. It's like, you can only make a golf commercial so many different ways. It's a golf club, you know, I mean. And so major credit to our marketing team and creative team for thinking outside the box, like Jamie said. But So, you know, obviously we want to sell product at the end of the day, but to just being like getting these fans and becoming Cleveland loyalists is also just as big for us. I mean, and Jamie can attest to this, like anytime people probably maybe meet him or even on our social pages, you know, almost every day we're getting questions about Grandpa Jamie still. Yeah. You know, it's like, I'm sure anytime he's introduced to people, you know, there's gonna be a question out there. Oh my God, that Grandpa Jamie thing you did was hilarious, you know? And then it's just really exciting too, for people who are not into golf to see that too and see the fun side of golf.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Let's get some more questions in, cause I'm really slacking on that. We haven't hit too many yet. Jamie, do you have any idea how many drivers you cracked over the years? This question comes from Golf and Nut on the forum.
From 2003 to 2015. I mean, obviously equipment has changed a lot, even, you know, from 2003 to now. I would say, oh man, a couple hundred probably. Yeah, a couple hundred. I mean, since I started playing professionally, I'll swap out a driver, whether, you know, I kind of have a limit to where it's, you know, a couple hundred to maybe 1,000 hits, and I like to take it out of play once I find a backup. Like, the first thing I do is find a gamer, get a backup, and sometimes it takes a couple. I mean, when parts come in, they're slightly different. There's rack glue involved. There's some lie angles. There's lofts. So I always try to have two gamers on hand, but you know, I'll take a driver out probably after 1,000 hits, just for my own peace of mind. I don't want to be in a round with something, you know, that may fail. And I know the way I do it, I haven't ever had that problem. With Cleveland Tricks On, I've never had that issue. But obviously I'm doing a little bit of a different job now, where when I show up at Worlds, I'd have a whack of drivers that, you know, 14 drivers, and I'd roll through a lot of them. but yeah, playing professionally, not hitting it as hard obviously makes things a little bit different. But yeah, I would say probably a couple hundred over the years for sure.
So my number is 2, in case anyone out there on social wants to know what my total is. It's not 200, it's 2. Noelle, you have any on yours or?
No.
No?
No, I don't have that swing.
I feel as human as you do right now, which is great. Are you searching for a feature-rich golf shoe for the upcoming season? Head over to squares.com and take a look at their footwear offerings. The most obvious design feature is the square toe design, which supports alignment and avoids the dreaded constriction that comes from the tapered toe design overall. They use a wider toe base with a serious cleat system to maximize stability and balance in what they are calling their torque generation system. Based on the feedback from others, their 100% waterproof boot makes them a big-time competitor for golfers playing in all conditions. They also have more subtle features like their heel stabilizers and stay-put laces to really lock in the foot. Have a look for yourself at squares.com. There was a really cool question that came from Rozo22 on the forum. It has to do with Maverick McNeely had a recent video footage of him playing hockey and talking about how the back issues were actually helped a bit by getting on the ice and skating and getting those muscles going. Do you still skate quite a bit, Jamie, or at all? And do you find that that actually helps with your game?
I'll say this about hockey is, being right-handed in golf, left-handed in hockey, I think it's like, you know, Gary Player saying that he hit as many balls left-handed as he did right-handed, or right-handed versus left-handed. So I think it's, you know, creating – kind of balancing the body, you know, shooting a hockey puck left-handed half the year and hitting golf balls the other way. I think it's a great thing for an athlete to train both sides of their body and strengthen both sides of their body. I don't really skate anymore. Kind of hurt my ankle in 2014 or 2013 prepping for Worlds, and it's never been the same. I've tried to skate a few times, and it still hurts when I put it in my skate boot, but hockey is one of those things, like after I stopped playing in 2008, after I won Worlds, it's kind of one of those things like you dedicate all your time, you know, when you're playing junior, practicing every day, you're playing 60 games, you're on a bus, like when you're over it, you're kind of over it. Playing pickup doesn't really interest me anymore because I've been cut open more playing pickup than I did playing 3 years of junior. You know, if there's, you know, Christmas time outdoor pond, I'll put them on. But yeah, I don't skate much anymore. But I do believe it's, for me, it helped a lot creating speed on both sides of my body. There's no question about it.
little beer league damage never hurt anyone. I can totally relate to that.
I think it's like a golden rule that once you kind of get your teeth fixed for the last time, you want to keep them in the same place because it's too expensive.
Let the record show, Noelle is actually shaking her head to these questions.
I'm going to put it in his contract that he can't.
Can't skate. Don't worry. I'm retired.
Icy Shanks had a cool one on the forum. He wanted to know if you were commissioner of the tour, what's the one rule change you'd make to the game of golf?
I would probably take care of slow play, and the players probably wouldn't like it, but that is one thing that I would tell my rules officials in a meeting, like, every week. Like, we are going to – guys will be on the clock, and it's not going to be warning one, warning two, warning three. You know, it's – I think it's a huge problem. And, you know, when you're watching live TV and the guy's standing by his bag and they got a cutout, guy, you know, they go to another shot, he hits it, they come back, he's still standing there, hasn't his shot, like – it's a big problem. So I think slow play would be one of the bigger things that I would try and tackle. And I think there's other components to that. I mean, green speeds make it, you know, it seems like, you know, even in Canada, like it seems like tee to green is okay. But once we get on the green, it's just a total dead halt. And, you know, there's factors when it's windy and the green speeds are 13, 14. Yeah, it's going to slow guys down because if you have a 2-footer that, you know, breaks outside the hole, yeah, you want to take your time because the next one coming back is probably going to be 6 feet. So I wouldn't necessarily touch green speeds, but I would put a push for slow play for sure.
So it's funny you said slow play because at my course, I don't consider that a rule change. I consider that let's just get rid of all those dudes because they don't belong here.
Right.
Yeah. I would say divot in a fairway is the worst thing in my game. And Noelle's nodding. I think you probably agree.
Definitely.
I wish that that was just gone. You're pretty cool with that? You don't mind hitting out of divots?
I'm not cool with hitting out of a divot when you are in the middle of the fairway. But what you have to realize is, you know, we've seen some rule infractions on the PGA Tour where there's cameras on guys and there's still things that you look back and you're like, what? Like, how? How does that happen? Well, how are you going to decipher what's a sand divot, what's a real divot, partial divot? You know, it's going to slow things down. You walk out, you see a divot, you're in a divot, assess it, you know, figure out how you're going to hit it. Now you're going to be calling rules officials. And then I think just deciphering what's a divot, you know, it just brings in more stuff that we're going to see on TV. And I don't know, I think there's enough of that stuff that to me, I've been in some divots and I mean, it's not fun, but at the same time, like you just, how do you decipher what's what?
So we'll make a deal. You can have the rule change on tour to slow play. Noelle and I as AMs can have the divot rule. Fair?
As an AM, 1,000%. Yeah. If you're an amateur and you're playing your country club and you're in a divot, by golly, take that thing out of there. Find you a nice sheet of grass and hit it. It's not
love it. Now we're talking. Hey, Luden on the forum wants to know, what parts of your game do you see as a weakness that you need to improve on as you work towards the next level of your career?
I think just consistency. I mean, you know, kind of having, you know, when I first started in like 2018, you know, I had the mentality of like, I'm not going to slow things down, but, you know, I hit it so far, you know, if I spin it in play, it's fine. Where you see what Bryson's doing now and it's, you're trying to maximize. That's when it's your biggest strength is, you know, hitting it far. You got to use it, and hitting it far just isn't off the tee. I mean, it's the ability to flip a wedge in when guys are hitting 7 and 6 irons in. Like, that's also a big advantage. But I think just overall consistency day to day, you know, 2019 seemed like I played really well on Thursdays and Fridays roll around, just didn't play well. And I don't know what it was. But I think consistency is a big thing. And, you know, I've worked real hard from 150 yards in, but I think you can't look at one facet of your game and be like, well, this is the strongest part and this is the weakest part. I think it, you know, if I don't drive it well, I'm not going to play well because my misses are a lot different than a guy that hits it 280. And that's just the way it is. So to me, it's consistency of every shot. I know that if I'm playing well, I'm going to take care of the par fives with distance. And if I don't drive it well and I'm making a bogey or a double on a par five, like, that's a big problem, and having the ability to get it close and 2 on par 5 is a huge advantage. So consistency throughout the bag is huge. And you know, I think in Canada, you're a little handcuffed with, you know, how I have to play those courses. I mean, it's not an excuse. Just you have to be good from 150 in out there, and you got to chip it and putt it. And, you know, I've always chipped it well. Chipping has never been an issue in my game. It's probably the best part of my game, even versus driving it. So overall consistency day to day is kind of my main focus. When you have your bad stuff, you better shoot one or two under. When you have your good stuff, you better shoot a lot under.
Yeah, true.
That's something you learn how to do, you know, and it's not pretty. The days that you shoot a couple under and someone looks at you, you'd be like, really? You shot a couple under? It looked terrible. Well, it means you're doing your job.
Right. That's a nice compliment, actually. I want to throw some Canadian stuff at you. You ready for it?
Yeah, sure.
And bear in mind, this isn't the America versus Canada thing. I grew up in Ontario, so we're on the same team here, okay? <All right. laughs> So Yukon Living, who's up in Yukon Territory, said he played junior hockey in Lloydminster and went to Bonnyville often to play against the Pontiacs. He said he really liked their rink, but my favorite was Grand Prairie. He wants to know what your favorite rink to play in besides your own was.
I did play in Bonnyville. Ooh, Grand Prairie, that was one of my least favorites, I think, because it was Line Brawl Central when we played up there. My two least favorites would be probably Grand Prairie and Fort Mac. My favorite would probably be like Okotoks, maybe, because there was never any fans and there were never an advantage. But those two, like Grand Prairie was always rocking. It was up north. It was the longest bus trip of the year, and it was always pretty nasty games. But probably like Okotoks, or they had a brand new arena, and it was always, when I first started, my first year was 2005, and that rink was pretty new, so I'd probably say Okotoks.
Do you have any guesses what your slap shot was at your prime?
I had it clocked at over 100 miles an hour.
Okay.
We did a Vice Sports a couple of years ago, actually out here in Arizona. They came down, and they spent the day. We went to the ice den where the Coyotes practice, and it's clocked over a little more than 100 miles an hour. My junior years, we didn't quite have one pieces then, so
yeah,
maybe it wasn't that fast, but I was definitely known for being able to shoot it.
Cool. How about favorite Canadian food? And I'm going to be totally honest with you. My wife is shocked I didn't have this written down. We always talk about poutine when we go up to Ontario because we can't really get it anywhere other unless we make it here. Is there Canadian food that you miss when you're in the U.S.?
Party food? I mean, not really.
Any food?
Hawkins cheesies.
Okay.
Do you have Hawkins cheesies?
I don't think I have.
Gibberish to me.
You guys are. I'll bring you each a couple bags of Hawkins cheesies.
I only know Tim Hortons and something about like ketchup chips.
Ketchup chips are good. Is there Coffee Crisp in America?
No.
No, Coffee Crisp is another good one when you're having your Tim Hortons coffee. Starbucks. You don't go to Tim Hortons for the coffee or for the food, though. You go there for the coffee, donuts, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's better. I better not say that, but yeah. It's better than some American chains.
So if you're going to go for a potato chip, is it All Dressed at the top of the list or no?
All Dressed for sure. I put All Dressed in front of ketchup chips for sure.
Outstanding. Yeah, they brought All Dressed and Dill Pickle down here, and I was thrilled by it. Yeah.
No Dill Pickle here either?
They have it here. Yeah, they do. So,
okay.
Yeah. But All Dressed is the tops until you eat too many, and then you're just in pure misery.
Yeah.
I did want to ask you a little bit about kind of that Canadian collective of golf, and I'm super guilty of this every time. If I see someone on the leaderboard with a little Canadian symbol up, I'm instantly, you know, they're the guy who needs to win the tournament. I don't care who else is up there.
Right.
Do you have a bit of camaraderie with the folks up there who are playing on tour, or the people who are in long drive? Is there a sense of community there for you guys?
Yeah, I think so. I think like on the PGA Tour, obviously, you know, people don't, maybe they do, but you know, I don't think we get credit for how big golf is in Canada. And yeah, it's a shortened season, but people are golf crazy. You think about being stuck indoors for like 8 months. And, you know, I remember being a kid, there's like still snow everywhere and the course opens. Like we were out there, but yeah, you know, I've gotten to know some of the guys. Graeme Dillette, unfortunately, he's been hurt for a long time, but you know, I always followed him closely. And now the young group of guys that we have, you know, I always love seeing those, you know, Canadian flags up on the leaderboard, Corey Connors and Mackenzie Hughes, guys like that, Adam Hadwin.
Yeah.
And then the guys coming up, a good buddy of mine, Taylor Pendrith, who's a Cleveland Trixon guy, who's a really nice player. And I believe he'll have his PGA Tour card. It's pretty much sewed up. So, you know, golf's huge in Canada. We have a great Golf Canada program. They do a great job for these young kids growing up. You know, unfortunately, I was never part of that. Just I was doing my own thing in Long Drive. And but, you know, I anytime I follow golf, you know, I've got my leaderboard of favorites on my phone, and it's all the Canadian guys. Just like to kind of keep tabs. And, you know, when someone calls me and say, like, you see this guy play today, I usually know what's going on and keep myself well informed on how the Canadians are doing for sure.
I love that. And then obviously junior hockey time comes, just leave me alone. I'm going to watch the games and might fight someone, right?
Pretty much how it goes. Yeah. I'm always home for the World Junior Championship. So that's kind of my, you know, 2 weeks of just, yeah, pretty much nice. Watch every game, whether it's Canada or not.
So I'm going to give you what I think might be my favorite question of the bunch. And this is the most relatable one I think we've seen all day long. John S. in VA wants to know, seriously, how hard is golf?
You know, I had this conversation with Bob Tway today. It was howling here today. And desert golf, when it is blowing, is very difficult. And our golf course, I mean, we play it from all the way back. It's probably 7,700 yards tipped out. And it was blowing, and our greens are as firm as I've ever seen them. And I played the first, like, seven holes perfect. Never hit a bad shot. And by, like, the seventh hole, like, I am out of breath because greens are firm. Like, for me not to be able to stop a ball never happens. And I was one under through seven, and I was playing. Like, I hadn't hit a bad shot yet, and I already made two bogeys. Never drove it out of play. Hit a 60-degree wedge from 96 yards at one hops. Goes into bunker, downhill lie, screwed, you know, struggle to make par. Like, and Bob looks at me, who's played in every condition, and he goes, I am playing my ass off, and I am two over par. And he goes, name me a harder game. He goes, no, honestly, what is harder than golf? And I'm like, I can't. I mean, hockey – you're having a bad night. You have a defense partner. You have teammates. You know, those single guy sports, single woman sports. I mean, given conditions, you know, like tennis is to me is different. You're on a court. It never changes. You know, you look at the same thing. Now golf, you have wind. You have different grass conditions. You have different pin positions. You have all the outside factors that can change how you're going to hit a golf shot. So to answer his question, golf is very hard because, you know, you could go shoot 60 today and tomorrow you may shoot 80 and you want to quit. And that's golf. That's probably what keeps us coming back. At times you lose your sanity. But, you know, I guess you got to learn to love it. And just when you think you have it, you don't usually don't have it. So those stretches where you're playing good, enjoy them because, you know, they're far and few between.
And then everyone else who's the game's just easy for, they play in sandals whenever they feel like, and you know, a couple of rounds a year.
Probably don't take it too seriously.
No, well, hey, you know what? I haven't asked you yet, and I have to know this with all this new product coming out from Cleveland and Srixon. What is in the bag for you right now?
Yeah, top to bottom. I've got the Launcher HB Turbo, 7 degrees in the well, about seven.
Yeah.
And then I go into the UT, and I play that in about a 17 and a half degree KBS prototype 105X, tipped a little bit. Got the new XV7 irons, 3 to wedge.
VX.
And then I have the Zipcore wedges, 50 and a mid, 10 degrees bounce, 56 and a 12 full grind, and then I have a 60 degree 12 with a C grind on it, 12 or 14, 12. And yeah, and the new XV ball.
Nice.
No 3-wood. I was messing around with a 3-wood.
Yeah, no 3-wood. Two.
Too far. If I'm going to hit 3-wood, I'm going to hit driver. I've come to that conclusion. I've tried so hard, and when I'm trying to hit a 3-wood, it goes too damn far. So
about why you went from you're playing our blades for a while, the Z4, and now he's playing the ZX7s. Can you talk about why that switch?
For me, it was turf interaction. The sole on the X V7s just get through the ground a little better for me. It has nothing to do with, you know, forgiveness, because the blade to me is a very fair blade. It's not tiny. It's easy to hit. But, you know, people say like you can shape it better with a blade versus a cavity back or whatever. But for me, I haven't lost any performance, just total turf interaction for me. Reminds me a lot of the old iron, the 745s.
Yeah.
With that sole.
And that notch. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes a huge difference for me. Obviously with a lot of speed, you're going to be a bit of a digger, and those have shallowed me out a lot. Easier for me to control ball flight when the turf interaction is a lot better. It's not as steep. Ball isn't right up the face and spin a lot more. So that was an easy switch. And as you're seeing on TV, a lot of non-staffers are playing those as well. And they're a hit. I actually talked to a guy that plays on the senior tour. I won't say his name, but he just ordered a set when they played in Phoenix last week. So a lot of guys are making the switch because they're pure.
They're pure. I love that. I caught a lot of grief, and I need to tell you, Jamie, that I am smitten. I don't have a better word. I am absolutely smitten with the RTX 4s that are stamped with Letterkenny quotes on them in my bag right now. And I've not got enough grief yet from Noel, so I'm going to bring it up on my own. I played them great today. They got me out of trouble a bunch. What reason for you, or would you give me, to switch into Zipcore? And not just me, but anyone else out there who's really enjoying RTX 4?
I mean, obviously, Cleveland is known for always having great wedges. So whether you have a 588 in your bag, like, it's always been a world-class wedge. For me, I think just, you know, I'm able to do a lot with those clubs in the fact that you can get them to spin, but at the same time, I can control ball flight really easy with them. And RTX 4s I loved. I also love the new option of having the full face in the zip core. And that's something that, depending on the course I'm playing, I'll be, you know, substituting that for my regular 60 degree. But it just gives you a little more versatility. Like, when the bunkers are firm and greens are firm, I think it's a great option. I don't play it every day just because I think it only comes in a 8 degree bounce. And I've always been a 12 degree guy, and I just get some of the back taken off so I can open it up. But that one, if I needed to, I could turn it into a 64 degree. It's just got that versatility. But yeah, if you're looking, you know, most amateurs struggle with spin, and those things spin. Like, you won't have any issues with spin. Consistency of the ball flight, I've always found, like, other wedges for me launched a lot higher, where these kind of come out of a better window for me. And yeah, just the consistency of being able to hit a lot of different shots with my wedge setup. Every wedge kind of has three different shots, three different distances. So just enables me to do that a lot easier than prior stuff that I've used.
He might have convinced me more than you did, Noel.
What?
You were basically just pointing fingers saying, figure it out. Come on, figure it out.
Yeah, all you have to do is take it out onto the golf course, and the answer is right there.
And you always got to have fresh grooves. So, and
true.
There's no more. No,
that is true.
Core, so go ahead and get you some zip cores.
I did send her a picture of my gamers, and she was not particularly pleased with the wear that was coming down on the 58.
No.
There's probably one more question from the forum that I wanted to ask you, because I thought it was pretty interesting. It's from G-Man. It's talking about the progressive movement in golf fashion. They want to know, would you rock the athleisure? I've never heard that term. Athleisure apparel on the course. And do you think Grandpa Jamie would ever rock joggers?
Yeah, Grandpa Jamie will not be rocking joggers, because he wears some big woolly socks underneath his golf shoes. You know, I would say no on the joggers for me personally. There's a lot of great clothing companies that make really nice stuff. And, you know, if I was 20 years old, like a Jocko Neiman or something like that, who's been rocking the joggers and the untucked shirt, I mean, that's a good look for him, being 32 years old. And, you know, it's not really the greatest look for me. But yeah, I mean, so some guys can pull it off. It's kind of like that white belt era we went through.
You know, I'm told that's dead. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I did that for a while from like the ages of 19 to 25, and then I was told it wasn't cool anymore. So yeah. I think that's kind of the same thing with the joggers and the untucked shirt and the no collar now, which is a huge thing. So I like a collar. I like to kind of be, you know, a little throwback, clean looking versus like I'm going for a run.
I think you would have a hard time convincing me that there was a place in golf for an untucked shirt on a nice expensive golf course, especially at the pro level.
Yeah, I concur. I mean, if your name's Jocko Neiman, you can probably get away with it, but you're not going to see it from me. Maybe if my ankles were a little bit bigger, but I got skinny ankles. I like to keep them covered up.
Yeah, I saw some of the guys wear joggers over at Pebble and that brisk weather they were dealing with. And not I said, good. I think they're in more pain than some of the elder folks watching frustrated by the apparel choice.
Yeah, put the slacks on, the pleated slacks, and be done with it.
Hey, normally at the end of the show, what I like to do is open the door to questions for me from whomever's joined me on the show. I want to do it a little bit differently this week and let Jamie, you are welcome to ask me or Noel any question you might have about anything you want. Do you have anything stock set up?
I don't. You caught me off guard, but yeah. I have a question, and I've always kind of wondered this. You guys obviously do a lot of product testing.
Yeah.
And from different manufacturers. Where do you what do you guys do with all the leftover product?
Yeah, that is a question for, as you politely referred to him as, Babbitt. We have an incredible THP Tech Studio right now that's hosting a lot of the new product that's out, including the new Z-Line from Strixon, lots of Cleveland product there as well. We have a ton of giveaways there throughout the year, and people can check out the THP Golf Instagram and Twitter. A lot of that comes back, and especially at the end of the year, we do something called the 12 Days of Giveaways at Christmas, and a lot of that product goes out there too. So we do some staff reviews. So we got a couple of writers on the group that see that sent out too. And then, yeah, I mean, giveaways are key. It's crazy how much it feels like Christmas all year long for them. So
awesome.
Yeah. How about for Noel? Give her something. You got to lay into her some way. It's
He knows not to.
Man, Molly's thinking for Noel, because I know she, if I say something bad, she can hurt me even worse.
Noel, do you have something you want to ask Jamie or me?
I just asked you like 2 weeks ago a bunch of questions.
That's true. That's why I gave you a chance to say it to
what
Jamie.
Driver are you gaming right now? I'll ask you that.
So this is a good question, actually. So I had been gaming the new ZX7 driver, but literally today I borrowed the ZX5 that was used at our last commercial shoot. So I'm going to give that a try, because both Hideki and Shane are playing the 5.
I did see that.
Got me a little intrigued as to why. I was with Hideki a few weeks ago, and it's very interesting to me. I've always thought automatically 7, and that's what I played before. But Shane said some really good things about it too. So
what was Hideki or Shane's reason for the 5 versus the 7?
It's a little bit, to them, it was a little bit more forgiving. And then they were able to shape it a lot more like easier.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly more spin.
Yes. Slightly more spin for sure. And then they just loved the address profile too.
Is it very similar to the ZX7?
The ZX7 is a little bit more compact shape for sure. It's more of a more preferred shape. And then the ZX5 is a little bit more like draw biased.
Gotcha.
So I'm very intrigued on that, and we'll figure out a day I can actually try it. But so
do we have a round counter right now, Noel? Are we still stuck at the same number?
No, we're still stuck at the same number.
Okay. So yeah. Jamie, over under 20 rounds in 2021, do you think she gets there or not?
Ooh. Are you back in the office?
No.
Yeah, I think you can do it.
No way.
Yes. No way. Well, you got to want to do it, though.
Yeah, I don't have time.
Sundays?
No, Sundays are like
Does your husband play golf?
No.
Okay, under.
he's starting to like want to go out to the range and stuff, but no. I mean, no. I can't do it. He's a big football guy and he just doesn't like rotate and it just stresses me out.
Yeah, it's probably better not to then.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. You know me. I will end up like I'll just hit a few balls at like our next commercial shoot and that's
your golf fix.
Yeah, that's my goal. We'll have a chipping contest and then I'll beat him and then we'll be good to go.
Getting the golf industry to not play golf.
Yeah. We'll see. But hey, I mean, I do need to practice though if we are going to have a big Srixon event with THP. So
yes, put on another show. So yeah. If there's a chipping,
I know.
If there's a chipping contest between the two of you next time out, I want a prediction right now. Who's winning then?
Well, it depends on the shot.
I mean, and you call a shot right now.
I actually have my clubs or not because there's a big difference because 99% of the time I don't and I just end up using his.
And mine are like tomahawks compared to
yeah. Those. I mean, like I used his driver at Pebble in 18. Do you remember that during the journey? Together? I was like, I just need to hit this drive. And then it was so heavy and so long. But
there's
I did
two people that can hit that thing, me and God.
Yeah, I did. And well, also too, the grip alone was like massive. Yeah.
We don't have that anymore. We got normal size.
That's right. Now. But I did hit the fairway. So, but I mean, if you're thinking like 60 degrees, my baby, so I can get up and down anywhere. But Jamie's pretty good too. So I don't know.
Throw a wager on it.
Yes. I got to hear all about it. Jamie, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time today to answer questions from TH peers. We are all 100% behind you in your road to the tour. Obviously Q school is coming up. So best of luck there and looking forward to seeing how the year plays out for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Anytime.
Yeah. Noelle, you're the best.
I know.
Next time we talk, I want to hear that you played a round of golf. Okay.
All right. I'll try.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks everyone for tuning in. If you're playing golf this weekend, have an awesome time. It's finally golf season here in the Midwest. Let's go.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.